Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 22, the marriage of Kadama Muni and Devahuti, text number 12. Udyatasya hi karamasya. Pativado na sashite Abhinirmukta sangasya Kamaraktasya kimbhunaha Ujitasya hikamasya Pativado na sashite Inirmukta sangasya Raktasya kimpunaha Ujitasya, which has come of itself. He, in fact, kamasya, of material desire. Pativadaha, the denial. Not. Sasyate, to be praised. Api, even. Nimukta, for one who is free. Sangasya, from attachment. Kama, to sensual pleasures. Raktasya, of one addicted. Kimpunaha, how much less. Translation. To deny an offering that has come of itself is not commendable, even for one absolutely free from all attachment, much less one addicted to sensual pleasure. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In material life, everyone is desirous of sense gratification. Therefore, a person who gets an object of sense gratification without endeavour should not refuse to accept it. Kadama Muni was not meant for sense gratification, yet he aspired to marry and prayed to the Lord for a suitable wife. This was known to Swayam Bhuva Manu. He indirectly convinced Kadama Muni, quote, "You desire a suitable wife, like my daughter, and she is now present before you. You should not reject the fulfillment of your prayer. You should accept my daughter." Unquote. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is the graduate study in spiritual life. So this here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear this statement by Swayam Bhuva Manu to Kadama Muni. So very great personalities involved. And really, to understand any verse of the scriptures, it has to be understood in context of the pastime that's being performed here, and in context to the Vedic literatures, the purport of the Vedic literatures in general. So I think it's quite obvious for most people to see that a verse like this from the Srimad Bhagavatam can be quoted or misquoted for all sorts of wrong purposes. I'll just read the translation again. To deny an offering that has come of itself is not commendable, even for one absolutely free from all attachment, much less one addicted to sensual pleasure. So, sometimes Srila Prabhupada used to say, speaking about personalities representing various religions and philosophies, and he would say, the devil is quoting scripture. You see in the Srimad Bhagavatam that sometimes even personalities like Ravana and Kamsa used to preach philosophy. So these verses for personalities who we have to put it in perspective. First of all, we consider that this verse is being spoken by two very great personalities. One, Svayambhuva Manu, a great devotee of the Lord, and Kadama Muni, also a great devotee and yogi. So within that, we can understand that, framework, their background of transcendental knowledge and ability to be able to take a verse like this and put it into proper perspective, they have that ability. Others may not. So it's not likely, Svayambhuva Manu knows that it's not likely that Kadama Muni would take this verse the wrong way. He's a very, renounced, completely detached yogi. He's not going to take this verse in such a way that to immediately look for an opportunity for sense gratification. As it says here in the purport, that says that Kadama Muni was not meant for sense gratification, so he was meant for higher transcendental purposes. That was his goal. Yet he aspired to marry and pray to the Lord for a suitable wife. So we get an example of how things may come of their own accord, and yet different types of people will respond differently to something which has come of its own accord. So a very famous example of that is one that Prabhupada gives, where you're walking down the street and there's a big wad of money on the street. And there's three types of persons that may approach that money. Now, the Kami, who is very desirous of sense gratification, they see that money and they think, oh, that's for my enjoyment. This has come of its own accord. This is my good fortune. I had so many desires to enjoy. And look, on the ground, there's a big wad of money. That's just what I wanted. They put it in my pocket and walk away. Like that. So they see just how the universe is fulfilling my desires for sense gratification like that. The ascetic, the impersonalist transcendentalist, sees that money and they say, I am practicing detachment from this world, and here is an opportunity for me to manifest my opulence of renunciation. So I reject that money, I will not touch it. I see this as an opportunity that the universe is providing, this opportunity for me to manifest my great prowess in renunciation and transcendental knowledge like that. A devotee, they see that money and they think that money has fallen there. It must belong to someone It is meant for their purposes. Let me try and return that to that person's, the rightful owner of this money. So they're like the honest person, but they understand that it has a practical utilization for the person that money belongs to. And they see things in this material world like that, that whatever they come across, that may have come of its own accord, but ultimately should be returned to the proprietor for their enjoyment. So although something has come of its own accord, different types of people will respond to it in different ways. Here, Swayambhuva Manu knows that because Gadama Muni is a devotee, that he has come and offered the hand of his daughter in marriage. So it has come to Gadama Muni of its own accord. But Swayambhuva Manu is confident that because Gadama Muni is a devotee, that he will utilize that opportunity in the devotional service of the Lord, which he did, which we see later on. So, still, even for the materialist, certainly they should practice being honest. But as a general principle, this verse still applies to the materialist, because we see that in this world, generally materialistic people strive very, very hard, practically sacrificing the best part of their life, the best part of their energy, the best part of their intelligence, to strive for things which are actually able to come of their own accord without such endeavour. So and the Bhagavatam gives the example of the ass, that the materialistic worker, they're like the ass, and you have the carrot in front of the ass, and the donkey, the ass is carrying the big load on its back, and thinking, if I don't work very hard for my master, I will not get this carrot like that. And which is, dangling in front of the ass. But as Prabhupada mentions in his purport, that as the ass is walking down the road, all along both sides of the road, we see that there is nice grass growing. So in fact, it's come of its own accord. The ass actually doesn't have to work so hard, but he could actually, just stop and, eat that grass. So there's so much that's come of its own accord, he doesn't have to labour like that. So this verse does apply to the materialist in that sense. They don't have to sacrifice all their principles. They don't have to become so sinful. Just like people take up a sinful occupation, thinking that I need money, I need finances, and here is an opportunity, at the local slaughterhouse, but I'm so desperate for the money, that I will, go and kill and do so many abominable activities. But actually, one does not have to engage in so many sinful activities, give up so many different principles, or work hard like an ass, because in fact, many of the things that people strive for will come of its own accord. And as Gandhi used to say, most people are acting according to their greed and not their need. So people engage in so much sinful activity to acquire so much wealth, and as Srila Prabhupada would say, but still, how many chapatis can they eat? So you become a billionaire committing so many sinful activities and destroying so many relationships, even with one's relatives. And at the end of the day, you can still only eat, 3 or 6 chapatis according to your body size. You still only sleep in a bed so long. And, those things which actually make you happy are quite easily come by of their own, like that. So this verse, in its taken in its proper way, therefore, you know, even the karmi who comes across some money lying on the street, they don't have to take something that belongs to someone else. They can leave it there, because what is theirs will come without, you know, having to steal and break their principles like that. So it can, it does apply to everyone. We see that the, you know, what happens is that in religion and philosophy, that people change their philosophy, teachings or principles because they want, according to the sense gratification of the senses of the body, rather than the actual principles of religion. So we see in Buddhism these days, they say they follow a path of moderation. Means that, you know, if they're travelling and someone feeds them some vegetarian foods, then, you know, they will accept that. And if someone feeds them some meats, then, you know, they will accept it. This is the path of moderation, and not being extreme like that. But actually the whole, you know, principle of Buddhism is based upon ahimsa, non-violence. And it transgresses the major, you know, principle teachings of Lord Buddha to be non-vegetarian as a Buddhist. But, you know, there's adulteration of the philosophy. But so they are following a process of renunciation generally. They don't have an understanding of the positive activities of devotional service. But for a devotee, their principle is that whatever is coming of its own accord by the grace of the Lord is actually meant for the service of the Lord. So they have no desire for sense gratification at all. There's no personal desire. That is, of course, the, you know, the exalted first class devotees. And we see that in the story of with Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, that Rupa Goswami would often think within his mind about the wonderful glories of his elder brother Sanatana Goswami, and he would always be thinking of how he could offer him service. And one time he was thinking like that, and you know, just while he was doing his chanting, and this young girl came out of the forest and said, "Oh, Babaji, you know, we've had some ceremony and some festival. We have so much, you know, foodstuffs and bulgur left over, so we'd like to donate them to the sadhu." So Rupa Goswami thought, yes, this is an opportunity that I can cook some nice foodstuffs, offer it to the Lord, and offer some nice prasadam for, you know, his, my Sanatana Goswami, who's living very austerely. So he made some nice prasadam, and he invited his elder brother to come along. And so then Sanatana sat down, and he's thinking, you know, we live in the forest, we live under a different tree each night, we just sit here with the loincloths. Where did you get such opulent prasad? You cook these wonderful feasts. And Rupa said that he told him about the, you know, the young girl who had come from the forest. And then Sanatana said, "Tell me a little bit more about this young girl." And then he described, you know. And then as the description went on, he realized this is Radharani. But then, instead of thinking that, oh, Radharani has offered so much facility for this nice feast, therefore let me enjoy, he was thinking, he became disturbed. What have you done? practically you've killed me. That's what Prabhupada said. It's like you've killed me. My life is meant for serving Radharani, and here I am enjoying this. I'm meant to be serving, not enjoying, not taking from Radharani, not taking something for, you know, my pleasure. I'm meant to be serving like that. So he was, so you see that mood of service. Even so, you know, which is very interesting, even something is coming from Krishna, for the devotee is just fixed that, you know, I'm just meant for service like that, for love, giving love, not accepting facility and enjoying. So that is the topmost. And still, here, according to our position in devotional service, not everyone can act like, you know, Sanatana Goswami. Actually, from the Kanishtha devotee, and even before that, the people who have practically not even, you know, come to that level, and you know, the Majjhima Adhikari and the Uttama Adhikari, so the, you know, the third class or the third category devotee, so they're just beginning the neophyte, the middle devotee, you know, mature devotee, and the 10%, you know, pure first class devotee. They actually require different, they're allowed different levels of sense gratification even within devotional service. And there's a statement within the third canto, I'm not sure exactly where, but that you know, one can accept that maya which is bestowed upon one by the Lord. So for instance, it's not that everyone who comes to the movement can immediately take sannyas. Yes, I joined on Monday. Tuesday, I took sannyas. You know, Wednesday, I was a pure devotee. I'm expected to go back to Godhead by Sunday. You know, generally, you know, people will, you know, need to enjoy the facility of family life. You know, to take a wife, to take a husband, to have children, to get a nice home. You know, to sometimes manifest their propensities, you know, and skills in this world. That facility is there. You know, the ability to just engage in 100% pure devotional service as one's life and soul, that is not there. That comes later, much later. So therefore, and similarly, you know, to give another example, prasadam. So, you know, prasadam, in the beginning, you know, we encourage, you know, the young devotees, just eat, as Prabhupada said, you know, eat prasadam until when you get up and walk, you'll waddle like a duck. So, you know, I remember on Sankirtan, some of my godbrothers in the early days, there was one devotee, Hridananda. I don't know if you're big, tall, from Scandinavia. Yeah, you know. So he was from the woods of Scandinavia, you know, big, blonde-headed, 7 foot tall. No, big. But and just a very joyful person, but he loved prasadam, absolutely loved it. He lived for prasadam, you know. It was his whole devotional life, you know, was centered around the meal times. And I remember breakfast, you know, it was just a pleasure to just to watch him, you know. So he would just eat, you know, like more than, you know, 10 men. And then, you know, the fascinating thing was that if there was, when everyone had gotten up, if there was prasadam left, he ate until it was all gone. You know how upstairs sometimes you get half a bucket of khichdi left and there's, you know, a bit, you know. So he would sit there until he'd eaten it all. Like that. You know, so he could eat prasadam like, you know, no one else could. So, of course, when we go out on Sankirtan, so in those days you could actually park a car on the side of the street without, you know, you could park there all day, you know, in the middle of a shopping centre, which we used to do. So these days you can't get a park, and if you do, it's like $20 a 10 minutes. But, you know, you could park your car. So I remember he would sit there in the passenger seat, his wig, you know, asleep, wig half, you know, in those days we used to have the wig half over his face, drool coming out his mouth down his jumper like that, for hours and hours, like that, you know. So, of course, you know, the senior devotees were just, you know, by this stage they'd probably collected $100 and done the whole street, and then you'd jump in the car, you know, by the time you got to about the second or third shopping centre, then he's starting to wake up like that, and, you know, he'd sort of... But because he was so blissed out on prasadam, he was in, head spinning with halva, and he'd walk into the shops, and he was like oblivious to anything. He still had wig half sort of on, you know. He got out of the car, he hadn't straightened up his wig, still got the saliva down, you know, like that. He's up, you know, getting out for, you know, a real bhakta, you know, bhakta armpit. You know, we say bhakta armpit, you know, is it the real thing? So he'd people would see him walk in, he was just got this halva smile, you know, from ear to ear like that, brimming with happiness, you know, just thinking, oh, you know, go back, I'm going to have some more prasad. And he put his paraphernalia on the desk, and people would say, whatever he's selling, I want something, you know, give me some of that. Because he was just, you know, buzzing, and people just, whatever it is, let me have some of that, I'll buy it, you know. So he used to just clean up, he used to say, he hardly even said a word, he didn't even speak much English, you know. And so then he'd come back to the temple and again like that. So, you know, in the beginning, that's fine, you know, there's not a problem. But of course, as one, if I was to turn up to give a class this morning, I still got the halva, you know, all over my face, and you know, sort of, blurry eyed because I'd eaten too much maha prasadam last night, and I was struggling to, speak my word. You'd probably be a little disappointed. So, as according to the service, and you take things a little seriously, then you may have to reduce, you know, some of the prasadam to accommodate your service. Not that your service is the prasadam like that, only. So, but you know, it's an allowable sense gratification, you know, in devotional service that is there. But as devotees, take certain services to the Lord very, very seriously. You know, they regulate their prasadam so that it doesn't interfere with their, you know, their sleeping and the work and, you know, their health and everything like that. So, the point is that for different levels of devotees, the Lord does offer, you know, more or less facility. And as far as sleeping too much, by eating too much prasadam. I remember there was one devotee when I was in Adelaide. He was another Sankirtan partner, and I remember he ate a lot of prasadam, but he had a lot of trouble, therefore, in the morning chanting his 16 rounds and, you know, following the program, because he wanted to just sleep, because, you know, it was just very, very difficult for him, you know, because... And I remember one time, you know, I didn't see him at prasadam, I didn't see him at the morning program, it was time for us to go out and do Sankirtan. And, I'd searched the whole temple and I went to every room of the temple. I thought, okay, you know, I've got to get him, we've got to at least go out and Sankirtan. And I couldn't find him anywhere, you know. And I knew he'd be sleeping somewhere, you know. And I'd searched the entire temple. So in Adelaide, this is the old temple in Frome Street. I don't know if you ever went there. They used to, down in the basement where they did the laundry, it was like this dark, room. And in the corner, there was like this massive pile of dirty clothes. You know, some devotees actually wore, and some was just, you know, just thrown there and just never to be touched again. And I thought, surely that's the only place I haven't looked. Surely he's not under there sleeping. And I looked, and there, underneath those clothes, there he was sleeping away like that. So, you know, it can get to a point where one needs to curb in the sleeping and the eating in order to, you know, rise up to perform one's devotional service with you know, some seriousness. But as we can see, you know, the facility is offered by the Lord to different devotees for different reasons. You know, we can look at other another thing that we see is that Krishna likes to test his devotees. Because, you know, we're looking at this point that some things come of their own accord. So if something has come of its own accord, do I just jump at it? Oh, Krishna sent this. Oh, this is for me. Oh, it's got my name all over it. Like that. See? Do we just jump at it? Or, you know, are there other reasons why Krishna is sending something? One of the things that Krishna does is that, you know, sometimes we like to advertise ourselves as perhaps a little bit more advanced than what we may realize we are. And but Krishna very easily sorts that out, because by offering various degrees of enjoying facilities, you know, sometimes someone who thinks that they're very, very advanced succumbs to, you know, the enjoying mentality rather than the service mentality. So sometimes Krishna does that to actually show that don't imitate personalities like Srila Prabhupada and, you know, the Guru Maharaj and, you know, some of the very, you know, exalted devotees. Don't imitate them, because Krishna has his way of sorting. You know, you can't fake it in ISKCON. You know, it'd be very realistic, because you know, Krishna can by offering certain facility, becomes for one who's doesn't have that strength of Krishna consciousness, you know, sometimes well, in all cases it can be beyond one's level of detachment and realization, and therefore if one is you know, in a situation beyond one's advancement, then it is very quickly revealed. You know, in a general way, you see that. Just in a very, you know, to give a small example of that, that when previously, you know, one of the big things I've noticed, big changes in ISKCON, in the early days, if a senior devotee was speaking, if there was a preaching, you know, whether they were speaking to another devotee, giving some, you know, Krishna katha to a younger devotee or to a new person. When we say senior, it means that person has been around for a few months longer than us. 6 months. It's not like they had to be a sannyasi or a GBC or some, you know. They were around for 6 months. We had great respect for them. And if they spoke, we zipped it like that. You know, I see a lot these days that if you sit down to speak, even very young devotees, or to speak of others, will just jump in and hijack that conversation so that a senior devotee may not even be able to get a word in. So they're sort of demonstrating, it's an opportunity, or here's an opportunity for me to show my, you know, great advancement and, you know, knowledge and my studies of, you know, like this. So, you know, these For that young devotee, that opportunity is almost like, oh, here's my opportunity. You know, it's got my name all over it like that. But you know, previously we were very cautious, you know, not to, you know. It states in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, very, very, very clearly that in the presence of a senior Vaishnava, one should not supersede that person, especially in the way of, you know, speaking. We see that the general mood of a devotee, just like we see personalities like Rishikananda. Rishikananda, disciple of Shyamananda Prabhu. So you know that Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamananda Prabhu and Srinivasa Acharya, you know, went and, you know, the first preaching party with the books from the Vrindavan, and they took that to, you know, all different parts of India. So one of the disciples, the, you know, principal disciple of Shyamananda Prabhu was Rishikananda. So he was such an empowered personality. Wherever he was, he made everyone a devotee. If he went somewhere, hundreds of people surrounded, and there was big festivals, he was such, I think it was Rishikananda even converted a mad elephant into a devotee. Very, very powerful. But in the presence of his spiritual master, he would not say a word. And if his spiritual master asked him, "You please speak," he would speak very quietly. Very, very quietly. You know, and just finish as quick as he could. My spiritual master's asking me to speak. Let me show my Guru Maharaj, you know, what a wonderful disciple. No, even then, you know, how can I dare speak in the presence of my spiritual master like that? And so this... so there are different. We see also Rupa and Sanatana Goswami that again, you know, when they were challenged to a debate by the great pundit, the Vijay, that you know, they were not interested in you know, having anyone glorify them as great scholars or great gurus or you know, great knowers of the Shastra. They just weren't interested at all. You know, you want a challenge to a debate? Yes, you just tell everyone you've defeated us and go away. We have service to do. I'm not interested. Oh no, you put it in writing. Yeah, here, we'll put it in writing. No interest like that. So that is the mood of the devotees. So sometimes Krishna tests the devotee in different ways. Sometimes what is being offered to a devotee is an attack of Maya. So this is an interesting one, because then how do you tell whether, you know, Krishna is offering something for it's the facility which is correct for the position and the service that you're performing in devotional service. Is Krishna testing me to see what I will do in this circumstance? Or is Maya trying to divert me from actually doing my service? So an interesting example of that is Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji. Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, so sometimes he would stay in like a dharmshala, you know, so that people would, you know, allow sadhus to stay in some room, some quarters there. And people, knowing that the sadhus were there, they would sometimes come and give some, you know, foodstuffs and what have you. So, Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, at this stage, he was, you know, practically blind for all intents and purposes. And there used to be a little basket, you know, hanging from a rope on the wall. He would come out and then he would see that there would be some bhoga left, and he would go into his room and he would cook for the Lord and make an offering and then eat a little prasadam like that. So one time he came out and when he went to reach up to get the Bouchard, there were some personalities there, and one lady also came there. And as he reached up to get, she yelled out, "You know, Babaji, there's a snake there," like that. And so, you know, he had his cane, he sort of knocked it, and of course the snake went and just sort of scuttled away. So then she was saying, "You know, Babaji Maharaj, you go back to your room. I will get this bulgur. I will cook some, you know, food stuffs and bring it to you," like that. And he said, "Mataji, you know, I do not accept food cooked by others. You know, he would just cook himself." And he said, no, then I will get, you know, some Brahmin or something to cook, or, you know, what have you, like this." And she kept insisting, like this, and he kept saying no, and then, you know, she just wouldn't stop. She just kept insisting, and in the end, he said to her, "If you do not, you know, stop, I will get very, very angry." You know, so she understood that, oh, I'm going to get this, disturb the sadhu, and then, you know, there'll be a great offense that'll cause me a lot of trouble. So she went. So when she left, then, Babaji Maharaj said, he said to those who were standing there, he said, "Did you see that? Did you see what happened?" And they're saying, "Yes, Maharaj, the snake." No. The woman was, no. He said, "Maya, in the form of that woman wanting to do devotional service, she was trying to prevent me from doing my usual service of cooking for the Lord and offering that." See? Maya was trying to prevent me from doing, in the name of devotional service, actually I was being prevented from doing my service. So, so that was, again, you see there that sometimes, you know, Maya just attacks in the name of someone offering service, someone, you know, offering facility, like that. So then the question is, oh, we've run out of time, but that, you know, how do we know? We do that next week, or so continue for another. What do we do? You know, how do we make that distinction? Anyone interested? So, the answer is quite simple. Of course, it's in the Bhagavad Gita that we see many times in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna describes that by devotional service one can understand and perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it really depends upon, in every circumstance, we have to perceive the Lord's presence. And what that Supreme Lord, we have to perceive His presence first of all. And then perceiving His indication of that. So in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, he describes in the 13th chapter, Krishna describes how he manifests himself as the super soul. And in text number 19, he says, "Thus the field of activities, the body, knowledge and the knowable have been summarily described by me." Knowledge and the knowable, meaning he has described the material body and all the material elements and the material world. And he's described the soul, the living entity within the body, and also the other knower is the super soul. And he says that only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. So by devotional service, one can perceive the Lord One can perceive oneself to be the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one can perceive the nature of the workings of the material energy, which is keeping us bound within the cycle of birth and death. And one can see how by the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes released from that cycle of birth and death. And that of course, is confirmed at the end of that same chapter, where it says, those who see with the eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the knower of the body, and can also understand the process of liberation from bondage in material nature, attain to the supreme goal. That's the last verse of that chapter there. And so Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, on this point of devotional service, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, the core, he used to instruct that don't try to see God, but you act in such a way that God will see you. Nice. And of course, if you act in such a way, that is devotional service, you act in such a way that God will see you, then he will give you that understanding. He will see, here is my humble devotee, he will see me, he will see my intention, he will see the process of devotional service, he will distinguish that between, you know, the material energy, and everything is revealed at that. So that, just being the humble devotee, is actually the always keeping oneself fixed as just a humble devotee, a servant of the servant of the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is a method to be able to perceive exactly what the super soul intends. So when things come of their own accord, we can understand, well, is this a test of Maya? Is this something else? Is Krishna offering some facility which I actually need for my service? That one can perceive that by remaining a humble devotee, because we always have a mood of service, like we told that story of Rupa and Sanatan. Even Krishna is offering facility, still, you know, a devotee is very hesitant, completely hesitant to accept anything unless they can see, yes, I have, the authority and the means to offer this in the service of Krishna. I have the authorization and the means to offer this facility in the service of Krishna. And in this same chapter, the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it actually describes that process of knowledge which the devotees practice. And the first item, amanidvam, humility. And Prabhupada says humility is the first principle of knowledge. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also says, Janada Pisa Nishanata Lord Pisa Nishanata. That without humility, that transcendental knowledge, the process of becoming realized in transcendental knowledge, that will not manifest without humility. It is the first and very, very important part of that process. Without that, part of humility, of course, is to understand that, in a general sense, that I am not the enjoyer, but the servant. Krishna is the enjoyer. So that's humility. Krishna is the enjoyer. The spiritual master is his representative. The Vaishnavas are his representative. They are the enjoyer of this circumstance. I am the servant. So that's humility. As soon as there's pride means I am guru. I am the enjoyer. That is a proud position. So In the beginning, of course, one may say, then, how does a young devotee, you know, we're not some great yogi like Kadama Muni, you know, we're not a very advanced devotee, how do I always perceive the presence of the Lord and, you know, the interaction of material energy and like that? Again, same chapter. Same chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 13th chapter. He says, in verse 25, he begins, the Lord begins, he says, some perceive the super soul within themselves through meditation. Others through the cultivation of knowledge, and still others through working without fruit of desires. Again, there are those who, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about him from others. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death. See, so that's humility. Without humility, very difficult to follow that process of bhakti, hearing. Because when there is pride, rather than hearing, we want to be heard. That is pride. But the humble devotee, they're quite happy. Yes, let me hear. And that devotee, in that humble mood, who's always hearing, they can actually perceive everything. They transcend the cycle of birth and death. They become liberated. From the very beginning. So even if some mistake comes, because they go to a senior devotee and they ask, you know, such and such happened, and that devotee points out, oh, no, it's not like that, it's like this. I'll give you an example. So, personal example. So, as a young devotee, where was I? Probably Sydney. So I got initiated after about 6 weeks, and then went to Sydney after. So I'd probably been a devotee for a couple of months. Pretty much still, you know, been a devotee for a couple of months, initiated after 6 weeks, so probably about a week after initiation or something, not long. We used to go out on Sankirtan, and one day, while we're out on Sankirtan, there's this group of girls come up, young girls, about my age. And one of them come up and hugged me and gave me a big kiss. It was a really attractive girl, from my foolish perspective. So anyway, I was thinking, just see how Krishna fulfills everyone's desires. You know, you see, you know, this Krishna, he just really looks after you, you know, like that. So, it was actually last week. No, I'm joking. No. It was actually, yeah. So, anyway, I went up to Ramai all excited. Ramai, he wasn't a sannyasi, he was brahmachari, my brahmachari Prabhu. I was telling Ramai Swami the story. I thought he'd be really, you know, oh, wow, great, Ganga. You know? He was like, you know, really concerned. And then I immediately understood, I've got the wrong mentality. See? He didn't say much. He just sort of grumbled as he does something. And I understood, I'm just on another planet. You know, this is not a benediction. This is more like an attack of mine. He was concerned for me. Like that. So, but even to hear the grumbling from my was enough to keep me out of the cycle of birth and death. See? Like that. So, you know, even from the very beginning, just that tendency to seek shelter and just confirm all your experiences with the senior devotees that you have confidence in. That will protect you and keep you, out of the cycle of birth and death. So it sounds very difficult, but it's actually really easy. So always just be a humble devotee, and you'll always feel the presence of Krishna. and you'll be always protected from the material energy, and you'll have unlimited facility for preaching. If you have a humble devotee and you just want to preach Krishna, just like he's doing with Kadama Muni, he will give you all the facility, you know, to preach Krishna consciousness and to be properly situated according to our level of Krishna consciousness and to make advancement. So I'll leave it there. Thank you very much. So does anyone have any comments or questions, stories? Yeah, so the two go hand in hand. Srila Prabhupada does mention in his letters to disciples, you know, who sometimes asked him about the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple. We know that the spiritual master is, you know, like a father figure, and therefore there's a very confidential friendship. So that is there, so that's natural. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada says that the disciple always maintains an attitude of awe and reverence for the spiritual master. That is always there, always. And so you see that with that example of Rasikananda, topmost devotee, but he always, no matter how qualified he became as a devotee and no matter how extraordinary his achievements were in devotional service, he always maintained that awe and reverence for the spiritual master, and yet there was also a very intimate, loving relationship. So, you know, both are there. In the name of having a free-flowing, confidential relationship with the spiritual master, one should not give up the awe and reverence. And at the same time, the awe and reverence should not impede that nice, loving relationship with the spiritual master. But, you know, in essence, it's good to let the spiritual master lead the mood and sometimes the conversation. But at the same time, what I do notice is that sometimes disciples, there's some really important things going on in their life. The spiritual master comes perhaps once a year or once every 2 years, and they bring something up, and the spiritual master says, "Oh, like this," and then they'll go and say, "What happened about that, nothing. The spiritual master said this and I just really couldn't understand it and wasn't really satisfied with it like that." And I said, I would say, did you tell them, did you tell them this? Because, sometimes devotees have said to me this, that and the other. I said, "Did you tell them the things that you told me?" No. "Oh, well, you tell them." The spiritual master is a representative of the super soul, but he's not the super soul. The disciple, there is an onus on the disciple to communicate clearly and inform the spiritual master and have a proper discussion about significant aspects of the devotional service. It's important for the spiritual master also to be able to allow the disciple some confidence to do that. So it doesn't always happen. Sometimes one may be in the presence of the spiritual master, one may feel sort of shut down really quickly, even though there's something really important. Sometimes that thing's happening. So The relationship between the disciple and the spiritual master is something that sort of grows. You know, they gradually communicate with each other. The spiritual master develops more and more his understanding of the nature of the disciple and their needs. That also increases in time. It's not like everything is there automatically. And the disciple more and more understands, you know, the spiritual master and how to communicate with them. You know, the spiritual masters are also on various levels of, devotional service. So one can be a spiritual master on the highest level of Uttama Adhikari. One can be a spiritual master just come to the level of Uttama Adhikari. So, you know, there are variations there. So, it's quite a big topic, but, in general, try to develop that ability to communicate very clearly and fully with the spiritual master when the opportunity is there. Don't just expect that he will know everything, and because if he's not properly informed by the disciple, And others, senior devotees who are working with the disciple, it's not very helpful. You know, it makes the spiritual masters work a lot harder than it needs to be. We should make the spiritual masters work as easy as possible by giving him as much information he needs to know. So, you know, there's a very human, relationship there. Yeah, please.
So, you were saying that as well that when you practice devotional service, one should develop a sense of feeling the presence of the super soul.
Yes. My spiritual master asked the exact same question to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada's answer was that you'll know when you are an advanced devotee. But the question is, we always feel the presence of Krishna, and yet advanced devotees are always feeling separation from Krishna. That was Prabhupada's answer. So we'll just leave that there. Any other? Yeah. Say that again. Was he? Is that? Incarnation, Andrew, yeah? You've seen? Yeah, so Rasikananda was an incarnation of Aniruddha. Jiva Tattva or actually Vishnu Tattva? I don't think Vishnu Tattva. Because because his spiritual form, he was told he was such and such a gopi. How can Vishnu be a gopi? That doesn't make sense to me. Because, you know, there was a whole that's because, you know, he was he had a rasa as one of the gopis, manjaris. How can he be Vishnu Tattva and Manjari? That doesn't sound right to me. But I've not seen that. If you can find the reference, I'll be interested, but it doesn't sound correct to me. Svayambhuva Manu. In what context? Because Svayambhuva Manu has come to offer his daughter to Kadama Muni. By the arrangement of the Lord, Svayambhuva Manu has done that. It's come of its own accord. It's very auspicious to accept it. You prayed for it. You prayed for the, you prayed for a suitable wife for this, you know, the aspect of devotional service you want to perform. Now here she is, you know, then why would you, reject it? Especially because Svayambhuva Manu was, he had some discussion also with the Lord, wasn't it? So, you know, he understood from the Lord himself Kadama Muni's situation. So, that's another interesting point. You know, you pray for something, the Lord makes that arrangement, and then we, out of shyness, you know, or humility, we reject it, or some, you know. So we actually have to know when to accept what the Lord is giving as much as when to reject something which is not, you know, that appears to be for us, but it's not. But we also have to know how to accept, you know. And in this case, actually, the principle is that he should accept. It was an arrangement by the Lord. Now, if a devotee doesn't accept something, so, you know, it reminds me of a joke that my father tells, just to finish the class on a light note. There was a big flood. And so this very devout religious person, his house got washed away, you know, everything got washed away, and then he was just clinging from the top of this, you know, thin branch of a tree, which was just, you know, he was just hanging on for dear life, the waters raging around him. And then he's praying to the Lord, Lord, save me from this, you know, devastation like that. So then what happens is that this boat comes past, like a speedboat. Get in, get in. No, no, no. I prayed to my Lord, he will save me. So, you know, astonished. Oh, we got other people to save, you know. So that when, and then another boat comes by. Get in, my Lord will save me. I prayed to him. Then a helicopter comes. Go away. You know, I prayed to my Lord, he will save me. So then, he drowned. Anyway, fortunately, he went to heaven. So he's in heaven. He goes up to God and he says, I prayed to you to save me. You didn't save me. I died. So that's funny, I sent two boats and a helicopter. So, you know, it's like that. So Kadama Muni, he prayed for this and the Lord has sent him. So we have to know when to accept and when to reject. And we do that by being a humble devotee with no other desire to serve the Lord and always, hear from the senior devotees. Jai, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.